for everybody who's contributed. Thank you for those who called in. Sorry, anybody, I didn't get to your call. My name's Paul Rowan. Thanks for listening. Wednesday Talk Radio, KBOO Portland. KBOO would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Overlook Restaurant, located at 1332 North Skidmore, a locally owned establishment for over 40 years, serving American classics with Mediterranean specials. Lunch was provided by Stickers Asian Cafe, located at 6808 Southeast Milwaukee Avenue, serving snacks and street foods of Asia, including Chinese, Thai, East Indian, Korean, Malaysian, and Vietnamese. Dinner was provided by Cassidy's Restaurant and Bar, located at 1331 Southwest Washington, serving Portland in the heart of downtown since 1979 and featuring local seafood, meats, and fresh pasta.
Gene Ritchie played a huge role in the folk revival in the 1960s, also known as the Great Folk Scare. She influenced many of the performers of folk and roots music who are active today. Some of these musicians came together to record a 2-CD set, Dear Gene, a tribute to Gene Ritchie. I will be featuring selections from Dear Gene, as well as playing selections from her own album. There will be available a very limited number of the Dear Gene CD sets as thank you gifts for your membership contribution. Tune in to Moving On, Friday, May 8th, 12 noon to 1:30, to hear music from one of the most important musicians playing traditional music.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. It is just a minute or so after 9 o'clock. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints features a speech by the late writer, journalist, and novelist Eduardo Galeano. And at 11, it's the KBOO Bike Show, news and views of cycling in Portland and beyond. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Please continue to support us in our upcoming spring membership drive. Next up on Political Perspectives, Jim Schumach interviews Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph Stiglitz about his new book, The Great Divide, Unequal Societies, and What We Can Do About Them.
I'm Jim Schumach, and welcome. My guest today is Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph Stiglitz. Born in Gary, Indiana in 1943, he is the author of numerous books, most recently Free Fall, The Price of Inequality, Creating a Learning Society, and currently The Great Divide, Unequal Societies and What We Can Do About Them, just published in hardback by W.W. Norton. Welcome to Between the Covers and KBOO, Joe.
Nice to be here.
Hey, I know Gary is also the hometown of Paul Samuelson.
And Michael Jackson.
And Michael Jackson, too. What was it like for you growing up there?
It was the quintessential industrial town. It had been founded in 1906 by U.S. Steel, named after the chairman of the board of U.S. Steel. So you know it was a company town.
Yeah, absolutely.
But when I was growing up, I hadn't realized it was the golden age of capitalism. I saw huge levels of inequality, rampant discrimination, segregation, and episodic unemployment. You know, my classmates' parents were out of jobs, every 3-4 years as the economy went up and down.
You know, right now, Gary's in a deteriorating state. It's 86% black, and they're really suffering there.
Very much so. It's a real testimony to the failure of the United States to have what you might call an industrial policy, to be able to take parts of the country, which are not doing very well, and restructure them so that they can do very well. I did a film a few years ago on globalization, and I began with Gary partly because it was so, had been so affected by globalization and technology. The steel mill, I went out to the steel mill, and the steel mill actually produces as much as it did at the peak.
Really?
But with 1/6 of the number of workers. And that means 5/6 of the people had to leave the city, in some sense. And it's a ghost town. The irony, and one of the things they pride themselves is becoming a place where people could make films. They made films about areas that were devastated by war. It was a little safer doing the film in Garyana than in Somali.
You were a National Merit Scholarship, which allowed you to get out of Dodge. You went to Amherst, initially majoring in physics, and then you changed to economics. Why did you change your field?
I had seen this inequality when I was growing up, and the question about why in the seemingly rich society we could have such inequality, why our economic system that was supposed to be the best functioning economic system, the market economy, didn't seem to work the way it was supposed to. And so I wanted to understand it, and I suppose I really wanted to change it.
You recognized that the effects on marketplaces were asymmetrical.
That's right. When I began my research, the fundamental question I had, in the back of my mind, it was really very much in the front of my mind, was what was wrong with the models that I had been taught in graduate school? These models had described how well the market worked. And I knew they were wrong because I had lived through seeing the ways in which they were wrong. They said demand for labor equals supply of labor. There's no such thing as unemployment. I knew that that was wrong. And so I want to know which of the assumptions went into the model that led to these wrong results. And there were some assumptions that everybody understood, market power, imperfect competition. But it occurred to me that what was the essential assumption was the lack of good information, imperfect information, that some people knew more about some things than others. And that is what was labeled asymmetric information, where some people know something than others. And the thing I was able to show, and which won me the Nobel Prize, was that it fundamentally changed the way our understanding of the way the markets work. Adam Smith, famous for his invisible hand theorem, that the pursuit of self-interest leads as if by an invisible hand to the well-being of everybody, I had shown was not true. The reason the invisible hand was not visible was just that it wasn't there, and that markets were rife with these market failures. And in a way, that has been, you might say, the lens through which I've seen the world and come to understand in many ways why we have such a divided society. I was finally able to answer the question that I began my quest with, why do we have such a divided society? And the answer, in some sense, is because of asymmetries of information, asymmetries, importantly, of power. That the kind of economics that you study in the elementary textbook is just not right. That the rules and regulations, the way we structure our economy, has resulted in some people doing very well and the majority of Americans not doing very well. Stagnation in the middle for a quarter of a century, at the bottom for almost a half a century. Clearly very different from that image of the market economy as the wonder that we often would like it to be.
And also of the American dream.
very much the American dream. And one of the things I point out in the book and several of the essays is that America not only has more inequality than other advanced countries, we have less opportunity. That is, the life chances of young American are more dependent on the income and education of his parents than virtually any of the other advanced countries. So the implication of this is that the way we see ourselves, the way others see us, this notion of American dream is really a myth.
I read that the most opportunity to go to college is based upon your parents having gone there and understanding all the processes that go into going there.
Oh, very much so. In fact, this is really important in the modern economy, because if you don't get graduate, for instance, from a college, your income prospects are very bleak. I mean, I talked about the average being stagnant for a quarter century, but if you are not a college graduate, if you're, say, just a high school graduate, your income has been going way down. You're much worse off today than you were a quarter century ago. But the problem is that if you're not born to somebody whose parents are well-educated or have a high income, the likelihood that you graduate from college is actually very low. But our system is even more unfair than that. And